To order, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2522. Colleagues, in your packet you have the amendment, which is a gut and stuff of the bill. What this is, and this bill is going to Ways and Means. What this is, it's a request from Senator Winters. And what it's dealing with is the creation of kind of an ombudsman position. I wish they had a different name because I can never pronounce that one.
Helper.
Yeah. And this is going to become basically subject matter in the Ways and Means Committee. And I would request that we send this to the Committee on Ways and Means without recommendation. We adopt the Dash 1 amendment and send it to Ways and Means without recommendation.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dalton.
I move the Dash 1 amendment.
Representative Dalton moves the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2522. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 2522 as amended to the committee on Ways and Means without recommendation.
Representative Dalton moves House Bill 2522 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means without recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, clerk, call the roll.
Representative Anderson.
Excused.
Representative Barker.
Aye.
Representative Dalton.
Aye.
Representative Wallace Anderson.
Aye.
Representative
Tomei. Aye.
Representative Westland.
Excused.
Chair.
All right. House Bill 2522, having received the required majority, is declared passed. Close the work session on House Bill 2522. Open a work session on Senate Bill 470. Sandy.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 470 is back before us. We had a public hearing on the 7th. This is the bill that is pertaining to county and community mental health and development disability programs, the reimbursement rates, the cost of living wages, mediation, dispute resolution, etc. It authorizes private cause of action for damages. We had at that time testimony that they were working on amendments. We do have those -H5 amendments before us. And also, for the record, at the time that Legislative Council issued the amendments, they also issued a letter of explanation, which just speaks to the request of the amendments versus we really didn't need to request what the amendments reflect as far as the governor's budget and the agency, et cetera, but there we have the amendments anyway. The proponents of the amendments ask that the letter be read into the record, so I'll pass that out now. We have Martin Taylor and the counties here. If there are any questions about the amendments, I know that you folks have just seen them.
Okay. And colleagues, if you remember at the last hearing on this bill, I requested I made a statement that I wasn't interested in amendments unless we had buy-off from the counties and the sponsors of the bill. I have received written confirmation that they are okay with the bill, and so all requirements have been met. So I would entertain the Dash A5 unless somebody has questions.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move the Dash A5.
Representative Barker moves the Dash A5 amendment to Senate Bill 470. Any discussion? I know you haven't really had a chance to look, but this is, trust me, this is everybody. I just thought I'd try.
Maybe we better have a study period.
No, it was a stretch, but you know, I give it a shot every now and then. So, any questions? Are there any objections to the A5 amendments? Seeing no objections, the A5 amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, move Senate Bill 470 with the A5 amendments to the floor.
Do
we pass?
Representative Barker moves Senate Bill 470 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Doesn't it go to Ways and Means?
not indicated that it has a prior reference, but they have not seen the amendment, so we don't have a fiscal impact statement on it at this time.
At this point, we'll assume the floor, and I really don't think it does. It has recommendations for a budget. It doesn't have real numbers in it. So.
And the implementation date isn't until, won't have an impact until the 05 budget.
So, any further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Anderson?
Excused.
Representative
Barker? Aye.
Representative
Delco? Aye.
Representative
Monica
Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative Westman?
Excused.
Chair
Aye. Senate Bill 470, having received the required majority, is declared passed. Representative Tomei, what do you think?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Okay. Representative Tomei moves that Senate Bill 470 be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. And I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 470 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 885. Sandy.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 885, A. Gross, comes to us from the Senate with a 25-aye vote, 1-nay vote. It requires written consent prior to an autopsy that's not related to death requiring an investigation, specifies who may authorize the autopsy. It allows that electronic transmission of a consent or the authorized person is not available to grant written consent in person. It requires development and use of an autopsy, a universal autopsy consent form. And I think we have to folks here to speak for you.
And members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ann Cruzen. I live at 4272 Penny Drive South here in Salem, Oregon. My husband here, Mark, is in attendance, but I will choose to speak to avoid any repetition and to allow for some questions at the end, if you have any. We are here to sponsor Senate Bill 885A, which pertains to autopsy consent. Based off of an experience that we had when we lost our daughter. And I've given each of you a packet, as promised, and it might be best to maybe have you flip through that with me so you can follow along and try to keep this short. The introduction is essentially the background on how everything came to be, which was that our daughter had her heart and lungs removed at OHSU, and they were subsequently lost. We never gave consent for this. The forms that were given to us are presented here also, following our introductory letter there to you. The first form that you're looking at is a consent for tissue and organ donation. And in the middle of that page, it does note that if you do consent, you may pretty much give away any rights to the tissues or anything that has to be done with those remains. My husband and I expressed that we did not want anything removed from our daughter, and you could see on the following page that consent was refused. Now, given the situation and the circumstances, our daughter's passing was a shock to us, and my husband and I were very concerned when she wound up going back up to the hospital, excuse me, in that we were very concerned that our daughter would be used pretty much as a study, something that would be an opportunity for students perhaps at Oregon Health Sciences University to see a transplant. Given our experience, we felt that we did not want our daughter's body invaded, and we put the directions down on the consent that they must follow the directions of Stanford physicians to determine cause of death. We were not interested in any studies or any research or any donation along those lines. Mainly to avoid any confusion, we just flat out said no, we don't want anything other than to know why our daughter died. And again, it says here consent was refused. We were asked about her eyes. Being our daughter was immunosuppressed, we said no. We did not want anything removed from her. The next form is the unlimited autopsy permit. That is the only form currently used at OHSU. My understanding is once you start writing in exceptions, then it becomes a limited form. The research that I've done and the different forms throughout the nation I've requested stand by that. They said that once you start putting any objections in, then that does become limited. It is not an unlimited, which means they can basically take and keep what they wish. We have on the following page the directions as noted, the contacts, the people who were referenced to as to who they might address in case there were questions, so we would avoid any potential problems. Again, I can't stress more clearly how much my husband and I were concerned at this point that our daughter would be experimented upon. We were not wanting any medical students to have access to her. We felt that, given the situation, we would prefer that that Stanford just follow the protocol to determine why she died. The following page is a letter that we received from OHSU that details what they think happened to her remains. We did not hear from OHSU on this matter for 7 months, and the explanation that was given to us was pretty much a guess. To this day, we don't know what happened to our daughter's remains. There are no records. There are no paper trail to backtrack on. I question that because I felt, being that it was both a hospital and a university, I would have imagined they would have had better paperwork access, keeping their records straight. So I did want to include a copy of the letter so you can see that this was the explanation that was given to us. I do want to point out at this time that there was absolutely no reference made to the letter that we received right before our trial, which basically said, and it's the one with the Hoffman-Hart-Wagner heading, it basically says at the second paragraph, that, as you are aware, the Cruzans both signed an unlimited form, which authorizes them essentially to take all major tissue or all major organs and tissues, and the right to retain custody of those. So it is confusing for us as parents, and perhaps maybe the majority of the public, that when you're put in a situation where you're asked to sign forms and you are trusting the officials that are doing the requesting to follow your wishes, it was essentially like losing our daughter again. You might have heard the expression, to lose a child is one of the worst things. In my book, it is. But then to have to go through this also was definitely quite a blow. And I would really hope that this law would prevent anybody from ever having to go through what we did. There is a letter here. I thought I would include it. It is a FedEx legal form from an attorney, which notes that there is no program available to any hospital or any other facility that would allow for the transport of human remains. And, again, that was one of the explanations that was given to us, is that that was how they were going to transport our daughter's remains, was via FedEx. Again, excuse me. They were going to take her heart and her lungs as a whole and ship them. We never authorized that, and Stanford never authorized that. And that following page there essentially clarifies what we did have the associate hospital director. Thank you. We had her write us a retraction. It's a public statement that says we told them to do that. And that is what is written by Patricia Southard. And then following that is her original statement that was released to the public. Second to the last page is an excerpt from a deposition by Renata Niederlo, who was the woman who requested the forms be signed by my husband and myself when our daughter died. And I did want to point out just where I underlined in the right-hand corner where it says they just made it clear that they did not want any tissue donation. And what I don't quite understand is the discrepancy behind, if you're not okaying donating anything, why is it then okay on another form that doesn't apply? Again, I'm referencing to the two forms that we signed. We refused. We explained to the best of our ability how over and over again, given the woman's experience of 27 years doing this job, I don't know how else to say no. I mean, how many ways up and down we should have said no. And then to sit there and have her say we had no objections. I wouldn't call it infuriating, but as a parent, you do your best to protect your kids and hope that you're heard. And lastly, I was able to obtain some consent forms. A lot of schools and facilities would not want to part with them, Salem Hospital being one of them. They do not want to share their forms with community members. But this was one example that I thought was short and sweet. Essentially, it does list what exactly you're consenting to, and that is what the bill is about. It is about if you are giving consent, it should be an informed consent. If you are saying, yes, I agree to donate my loved ones or allow the school to take the organs or tissues or whatever matter, if you're okay with that, that's fine. But in our situation, we said no, and we were told then they went missing. It's kind of hard to understand. So, again, at the very end to be told, well, since you guys signed the form, you know, we don't have to follow any of the direction. They did not notify Stanford. We did obtain phone records. No calls were made, as claimed. So, again, we're in a position where we would hope that nobody else has to go through what we did. And that's what I have. If you have any questions.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You did a very good job.
Thank you.
Katie King.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Katie King, and I'm the Intergovernmental Relations Liaison for Health Services in the Department of Human Services. And I'm here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 885, which would require standardized informed consent prior to the performance of all non-required autopsies. Right now, obtaining informed consent prior to conducting an autopsy is required as part of hospital licensure. And several hospitals have confirmed that this procedure is being followed. However, obtaining informed consent for an autopsy is not required by law, and the department believes that standardizing the process and reminding hospitals of the requirement to obtain informed consent will help to fully inform families to make decisions during really stressful times. And this bill basically requires that the state public health officer work with the state medical examiner to develop a standardized form, and then we'd be required to make sure that hospitals get copies of the form. And this is something that we can do within existing resources. So thanks for the opportunity to testify, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions to Katie?
Just one quick one.
Yes, Representative Mona Sanderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does DHS have any accountability, inspectors or on issues such as autopsies? I mean, is there any standards that are supposed to be followed that then DHS oversees?
Chair Cruz and Representative Mona Sanderson, DHS is responsible for the hospital licensure program, and that's and informed consent is one of the things that is required by JACO, which is a joint accreditation process for hospitals. The main purview over autopsies is held by the state medical examiner's office.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Katie. I'm not going to ask you about your book.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That would take too long. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 885 and open a work session on Senate Bill 885.
Mr. Chair, and
Representative Barker.
Move Senate Bill 885 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barker moves Senate Bill 885 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, clerk, call the roll.
Representative Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Delco?
Aye.
Representative Monica Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative
Westland. Excused.
Representative Cruz.
Whoa. Come on, Kelly.
Okay.
That's okay. I know you are. All right. I'll go ahead and vote. Senate Bill 885, having received the constitutional majority, is passed.
Put on the consent calendar. I mean, it's a nice bill to talk about, but
would you like to talk about it?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Representative Tomei will carry, and I will close the work session on Senate Bill 885. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3629. Sandy.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Committee members, House Bill 3629. Is authorizing the Department of Human Services to issue warrants for the overpayment of public assistance payments. It also authorizes that the warrant be recorded in the county clerk lien record, and it specifies enforcement procedures for the issuing of warrant. And I believe this is a product of what we talked about on our tour, and I believe Representative Tomei and others will speak to that.
Would you like me to go down there to speak, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, well, and if Richard and Stephen want to join the representative.
And just quickly as a follow-up, committee members, this does have a referral to Ways and Means.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to see you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nice to see you, all of you. Chair, you want me to continue? Chair Cruz, members of the committee, for the record, I'm State Representative Carolyn Tomei, representing House District 41, encompassing the city of Milwaukee and parts of Southeast Portland. Thank you for hearing House Bill 3629, legislation that authorizes the Department of Human Services to issue warrants for recovery of overpayments of public assistance. Briefly, House Bill 3629 addresses and offers a remedy to the administrative and legal costs of pursuing benefit overpayments. When a person receives benefits to which they are not entitled, the client overpayment recovery unit of the Department of Human Services has the responsibility to attempt to recover the overpayment. Currently, the beneficiary is entitled to an administrative hearing. If the benefits are not recovered voluntarily, the Department of Human Services must file suit in small claims court or refer the claim to the Department of Justice. Since an administrative hearing was held and a decision made, it is duplicative to go through the courts. This duplication cost exceeds $120,000 per biennium. House Bill 3629 resolves this duplicate spending and expedites the process of recovering overpayments by granting the Department of Human Services the authority to file warrants. These warrants would allow the DHS to issue garnishments when the decision of the administrative hearing is that the beneficiary was not entitled to receive public assistance. I requested the drafting of this cost-saving, streamlining piece of legislation at the request of the Department of Human Services. It will save the state money and allow for greater assistance to Oregonians who need it. And thank you for your consideration of House Bill 3629.
Please, go ahead. Good morning, Chair Cruz, members of the committee. My name is Rick Mills. I'm with the Department of Human Services. I was prepared to testify, but I don't think there's much need for me to add to what Representative Tomei said, except I would make one further observation. Currently, the courts are operating on 4 days a week. Small claims court hearings, of course, are a very, very low priority. And even in those situations where we would have matters in excess of $5,000 being handled in circuit court, those are also going to be low priority compared to obviously more important things like criminal prosecutions. So during times of budgetary constraints like this, it can actually be very problematic for us to get a hearing in court if it's necessary. And so those things will just be on indefinite hold. And then when the courts do kick back in, of course, we will have a significant backlog. So this further delays, in some cases, our chances and ability to effectively recover. And anybody who's in the recovery business game will tell you that time is absolutely critical. The sooner you get working on these things and start pursuing them, the better our chances of success, and the longer it takes for us to pursue them, the less we're going to recover. We're happy to answer any questions. To the left here, to my left is Steve Stover. He's the manager of the overpayment recovery unit, which is tasked with these collection efforts.
Representative Mona Sanderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How much do we recover in a year?
Representative Cruz and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Stephen R. Stover. I reside at 3525 Begonia Drive in Salem, Oregon. Annually, we recover a little over $5 million. With the recession, our recoveries have gone down slightly. We 2 years ago, we were recovering about $5.44 million. And in 2002, fiscal year ending 2002, we recovered $5.1 million.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the total amount you're going after?
The total universe of collections in all programs is about $41 million. And some of that is old. We're in the process of reviewing our older ones and either writing those off or pursuing them more aggressively.
How old's old? I mean, do you have a standard formula for determining a bad debt? Or
Chair Cruz, we have some of our standards are set by the federal programs. For instance, the food stamp program. They don't allow us to write off a debt until it's at least 4 years old. However, when you're dealing with low-income people, a lot of times what we look for is we don't collect from anybody that isn't over the federal poverty level. So we look at their wages first to see if they are making enough money to recover from. And that's one of the goals of the Department of Human Services was to get people into a self-sufficiency situation. So sometimes that can mean 5 or 6 or even 8 years. The Food and Nutrition Service allows us to leave the overpayment on the federal debt for the Treasury Department for tax offsets for 10 years.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Close public hearing on House Bill 3629. Open the work session on House Bill 3629. Representative Tomei.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3629 to go forward with the due pass recommendation. Is this going to be going to Ways and Means with the subsequent referral to Ways and Means?
Representative Tomei moves House Bill 3629 to the floor with the due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. By prior reference. You're welcome. Is there any discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Balto?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative Westland?
Excused.
Chair Cruz?
Aye. House Bill 3629 have been received. The Constitution majority is declared passed. And I want to thank Representative Tomei for her work on this. We appreciate it. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3629. Colleagues, expect, I don't think we will have a meeting Monday, but expect them Wednesday and Friday for next week. Seeing no further business, we are adjourned.